Billy Fiatta, and this is a series on stories and self. And tonight is our, well, sort of fifth session in this. Yeah. We had a kind of small impromptu session that wasn't on tape yesterday, but tonight is the fifth session in the series, and it's entitled Change, Change, Change. Where will it lead us, or will it lead? And we're looking at stories of change and transition in our lives and seeing what the potential for growth and transformation is. Now, here at Holden, as we all know, there isn't a lot of continuity in who comes to the session. So some of you have been here, some not. Many of you are new, and so I'm just going to do a little recap for those that are new, what we've done before. And the series started actually with on Monday night with stories about the Red River Valley flood. One of the staff persons here, Heather Tweet, who was a first-year medical student in Grand Forks at the university and was a volunteer, joined me in talking about some of the stories from the flood. And I spent 9 days as a mental health disaster relief person with the National Red Cross. So that was an interesting evening. Our second session, we focused in on family stories. And these are stories that come from our heritage. Sister Rosina has talked a lot about stories and from Ghana and family and community there, which have enriched us this week. But we each have stories. We each have stories from our families that have been handed down to us that are also a part of us. They're stories that are told maybe over and over again. Humorous, some sad. Sometimes the stories about difficulties or pain are often deleted in stories or memoirs. But we shared family stories. And they help, they become part of our story too, and they help to shape our lives. Then yesterday, or the third session, that was 2 days ago, we focused on our own lives and honoring the parts, the stories from our own life, and focused on particular strands. If you think of your life as a tapestry and you keep adding to that as we live our life, so we picked out a particular strand or thread from that tapestry and followed it from the earliest memory to where we are now. So things like your faith life, your work life, family life. One woman took clothing and traced the clothing that she had worn from the time she was a little girl when she was told what to wear until a time when she was able to make her own decisions, which also then coincided with her becoming her own person and becoming more of herself. So picking out a particular strand and following it in order to begin to honor some of the particularity of our lives, because we get so, we live our lives and we're busy and everything kind of gets blended together. Okay. Today, one more thing. In the session we had yesterday, in the kind of impromptu session where we started out with a very small number and then added a few more, we talked about stories of place. Does it make any difference where you have lived? How much you've moved around? Are particular places had more influence on your life than others? Now, what we discovered when people began to share stories was that as we shared stories and listened, we broke up into dyads or two people. One would be the teller, one would be the listener. As we shared stories, the teller would discover more stories were coming up as she or he was talking about a particular story. The listener would often find similarities, like, oh, you know, that's part of my story too. So later when we break up into pairs and do some story sharing tonight, I'd like you to think about, as you listen, to see what stories, pieces of your own story you find in the stories of other people. Now, life stories don't just sort of lie in a person's consciousness, waiting to be brought forth. They're something which are created. And they're created through the meaning and the continuity that the person creates and develops in his or her own life. By reviewing one's own life, by writing. Some of you are writers and doing some writing about your own life. Some of you have done some genealogy work. You can do it by looking at photographs. It evokes memories of that. And life stories are also created through conversation, and that's primarily what we've been involved with in these sessions. So life stories appear and are created through a dialogue either with oneself or a dialogue with somebody else. So tonight, in the last session of this series, we're going to talk about stories of change. Now, stories of change are interwoven with all of our stories, other stories in our life. They intersect and they overlap the stories of place or the stories of the strands in our life. And they're stories that often have a deeper meaning, or there's a new consciousness that is raised, or maybe a new perspective that the change stories offer us. And they contribute to the sense of self, who I am as a person, what my identity is. And in stories of change, emotions are more apparent. They may be in other stories that we've had too, but when we think about different stories of change in our life, there's often some feelings that come in there, or some emotions, some stronger emotions. Now change, when we think about change, it can happen suddenly and unexpectedly, as it did for a friend of ours, whom some of you know from St. Olaf, John Mockestad, who is retired as an art professor from St. Olaf College. And he was doing just an ordinary thing about 3 weeks ago, driving a rototiller with a can of gasoline to his son about 40 miles away. And on the way, the gas tank exploded, the small gas tank he had in his car, and it started a fire. There was an angel that appeared, and a truck driver or somebody nobody will ever know, who saw it, must have been right behind him, went to the car, pulled him out of the passenger side, rolled him in the grass to stop the fire, and then left. A police car was also in the vicinity and had seen this happening up ahead, and arrived calling the ambulance and fire truck, and within 20 minutes he was in the burn unit of Ramsey Hospital in St. Paul, Minnesota, which is one of the best burn units in the country. So change for John came suddenly and quickly. He had been asked to come to Holden this summer, and he declined, and just had a letter from Bobby today, and she said if he had known what he was going to have to endure, the hills and hiking, and Holden would have been a much better choice. But we don't know. So change can come very quickly and suddenly, and precipitate a lot of other changes then in our lives that we have to deal with. Change can also be anticipated over a period of time. When you think of, well, what would you think of? Change that you anticipate.
Getting out of school and moving on to a career.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Others.
Kids getting married.
Kids getting married, right.
Or unmarried.
Or unmarried. That's true. It happens both ways.
And career to looking forward to retirement.
Looking forward to retirement. Mm-hmm. Any others?
Losing someone.
Pardon?
Losing
somebody?
Somebody.
With illness or... Mm-hmm. So that there can be celebrative anticipation and also painful anticipation, knowing that there's going to be a lot of pain or loss or death. Change can be as simple as an aha moment, a kind of a shift in perspective. Where would you find that?
I see it when kids learn to read.
When kids learn to read?
Yeah.
Okay, just, your teacher?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they have it.
And what happens? Their face just...
You can look at them and you know they can read it. And they know they can read it. And they just get it.
So there's a knowing and a just, it permeates.
I can do that. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it's not really something I know. Mm-hmm. They just can do it.
And it's a very dramatic moment, but it's a moment that makes it a real shift for them.
I sometimes come to understanding through some difficult decisions that you have to make, that you have to struggle with. There are times that suddenly the whole thing will open up, and what you've not seen before will be right there in your face. And you'll go, oh, aha, I should have noticed this long time ago.
And it's been there.
It's been there all the time.
But somehow you haven't... been open to seeing that.
Mm-hmm. I think there's change in James. James is our grandson.
Oh,
we're missing him.
And he all of a sudden started climbing upstairs, and I hadn't seen him climb upstairs. So he went up the stairs, and then he started to turn around and come down the stairs. But he only came so far that he wanted some help.
He's only 11 months, so he needed help getting down.
I see it in therapy.
In therapy?
For people. Mm-hmm. Health conditions, I think, can be aha moments for people. And, realizing perhaps their own addiction or acknowledging their own mental illness or just working on self-growth and suddenly something
where makes there's
sense.
A moment of insight that really is significant for that person. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember times like that too and doing therapy with students. Others? How about reading a book? And discovering something new, or a lecture, or sermon, conversations. Mm-hmm. Here at Holden, there are lots of conversations, and sometimes a conversation sets you on a new track of thinking.
Travel experience.
Travel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially maybe to a very different culture.
Mm-hmm.
A Holden experience.
A Holden experience, right?
Well, relationships always change in the family and with friends and relatives. And
kind of on
people age. I mean, they change.
Right.
conditions change for everyone too.
So a more gradual kind of change that when you don't see people
together
for a while.
Grow apart or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or just as the relationships change. I know with my dad, I was a little girl for a long time, and now I'm an adult with him. And just changing from a dad and daughter relationship more of an adult relationship.
Mm-hmm. And that's, it's over time, but sometimes that can be recognized at a particular time too, that, oh, now.
Well, when my grandfather, my dad's dad, died very unexpectedly, and he and I went over to be with him as he died and then make funeral arrangements and such. And suddenly my dad was asking me things talking to me like an adult, although I'd been an adult for years. Suddenly, I guess he saw me as an adult that he could be an adult with.
Be an adult with. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes that happens to me with the Bible.
Hmm. In reading.
In reading, you've been reading the same Bible for years, and then suddenly something else can say, oh, that makes sense. And it happened to me about 2 Sundays ago.
Hmm.
And the lessons were from Episcopal lectionary. It was the 10 Commandments, Old Testament, and the breaking of the corn in the field in Mark. And Jesus saying, don't you know what David did when his men were hungry? Because people were confronting him that, why would you let your disciple break corn? Because it's breaking the Sabbath. And they put it together with the 10 Commandments. So you have the 10 Commandments read, and then you have this also. And then suddenly it's just like, you know, enlightening. Just I said, oh, yeah, I can understand that. The 10 Commandments was given to them when the people have just left slavery, and they didn't know how to control themselves or live with themselves. So Jesus was saying, you grow up now. You matured.
So you really...
You have to, reason that on Sabbath day, if you just sit and the roof is falling on your head, just get up.
So it was a new discovery. New discovery.
Yes, it was for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In that instance.
And so I went, but I haven't seen it that way before.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of those aha kind of moments.
Well, it's like it gets deeper gradually. You understand it in Sunday school as a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear a sermon, and you go, okay, well, I guess I kind of understand that. There's that moment, like you described, when it suddenly becomes so real, and you say, oh. Because I had that happen, too. But last year, my family came unraveled, and I had to make some tough decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was mourning that and feeling sorry for myself and all the natural grief things that happened, I was just walking through my house doing something irrelevant, and all of a sudden I thought that scripture that greater love has no man than this, that he lays down his life for his friend. And I thought, well, you know, I always thought that meant getting hit by a bus or crucified, you know, that you had to bam, die. And then it suddenly occurred to me that that's what I was doing, that I had to make these tough choices and unravel my nice, tiny little life in the dream, because that's what love needed. And I thought, uh-oh, that's a lot tougher. I think I prefer the bus. Yeah.
So there is a readiness for change, too, I think, that sometimes we may not be ready to see what is right there before us or to hear. And that sense of somehow I'm ready to hear something new or to notice something different. Change can also come from other forms through culture, social, environmental, like civil rights movement, feminism, declarations of war, natural disasters, that type of thing too, that can really radically change people's lives, and not just one, but when change comes, it often affects other people as well. Change is usually stressful. Anybody find it not stressful, whether it's a positive change or a negative change, you know, or if we're looking forward to something that really is a happy occasion, it's still like a wedding, a marriage of a daughter or son. It's a loss at the same time that you're gaining something. And it affects a lot of different people. The birth of a new baby is a joyful time, but it also, there's a lot of work, and a whole lifetime of parenting ahead. And
Even retirement,
yes. Mm-hmm. Did you want to say more about that?
This is your show.
So stories of change affect us and alter our directions. They give us new insights, new paradigms. They deepen our understandings of ourself and ourself in relationship. Our relationship to others and also to our larger world. So in this kind of story of change, you're again saying, as in the stories that we've done before, whether it's with strands or with place, this is my story. This is how it was for me. It's a particular story for me in my life. It says something about you as a self and about who you are as a person, your identity. And since we don't live in a vacuum, we are part of a larger community, change is not just affecting us, but it affects others that we live with too, as Sister Rosina talked about too in her community. Now I want to leave some time so we can do some talking about our own stories. But I want to show you a couple things first. A couple books. Dakota, I've been talking about this all week. If you haven't read it, there are copies in the bookstore or maybe in the library. Kathleen Norris, who was a writer in New York, she lived there for 12 years, and she made a significant change of going back to North Dakota and living where her roots were. And there are a lot of changes that go on in that process of rediscovering and reconnecting with her past and her roots that are wonderful stories. And I love the every month, she gives a weather report 12 times in the book, which goes through every month of the year. So Dakota. The other book is The Measure of My Days. And maybe some of you have had this or read it. It's by Florida Scott Maxwell, who was a woman that, I think she's was English. She raised a family, and then in her 30s, went back to get training as a Jungian analyst and spent the next 30 plus years as a therapist. This book was written in her 80s, and I think she's now deceased. It's a gem of a book that of a person that looks back over their life and the changes that have occurred in a lifetime, and you can read a paragraph and just chew on it and reflect on it for a day or more. Another person I'd like to introduce you to is someone who also at this point is deceased, but I came across this at the Museum for Women in Washington, D.C. She's an artist whose name is Hollis Sigler, who had breast cancer. And the way she dealt with her change was to do a whole series of paintings. And it's a marvelous book that she calls Walking with the Ghosts of My Grandmothers. And I can pass it around. It's her breast cancer journal done in paintings. Another artist that I came across in Santa Fe about 4 years ago by the name of Rick Dillingham, who is a potter. He is also deceased. He died of AIDS about 3 years ago. And I saw his last exhibit. Part of it was an AIDS series. The other part were many of the pots that he made over the last few years, and he became quite well known, and his work is in many museums, both nationally and internationally. But what he did with pots, and he would make huge ones, he would glaze them and fire them, and then he would break them apart, and reassemble them again. So what you saw in his work was the reassembled pots, and the beauty of them with, sometimes he would paint them or reglaze parts or leave some as they were, and you would see where they were put together. They were just gorgeous pieces. But it was such a metaphor for me of life and how the brokenness and the changes in our life, how change and brokenness there's a lot of strength in when one puts that together again and rebuilds. Okay. Now we have to make a decision here on storytelling. Whether we just have people, each person find a story, and we'll take a little time for that, and tell it to the group, or divide up into, in fact, we have enough people, we could divide up into threes, or what is the wish of the group here?
How much time do we have?
We have about a half an hour. That's the advantage of having it as in the larger group is, so we hear the stories of other people. Otherwise, you're each talking to one or two people, and then we don't get a chance to hear some of those stories.
I go for the large group.
You go for the large group? Is that feel comfortable for? Okay, all right. And the other piece I need to check out, since this is on tape, telling your story will be on tape. And so you have to feel comfortable with that. And maybe in choosing a story, that may be the place that you look at that comfort level, so that you don't feel like this is something that you don't want other people to hear, or other people to hear, you know, on a larger audience.
We could turn off the tape, couldn't we?
If someone wants this.
If somebody wants to, we could ask them. If somebody wants to, yes, we could ask to turn off the tape for that story.
Mm-hmm. Is there a general theme that we're supposed to follow up the story? Or?
The stories are about change tonight. Mm-hmm. So change is in your life. And we went through a whole battery of what that might be. But think.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you to just relax, maybe uncross your legs, and get in a comfortable position, and take some deep breaths, and just relax. If you want to close your eyes, you can do so, and allow your spirit to move about, to cruise about, and bring you a particular story of change. Let a story of change.
Okay, good.
Melissa. I was thinking back to a year ago when I was 29. Actually, interesting, it's about a year ago this month, and that on a Thursday, I did my last day of my internship, my graduate internship that I've been doing for 9 months. And on a Friday, I finished my last day of my job that I'd done for 2 years. And on that Saturday, I took my last class in the graduate program I'd been in for 3 years. And a couple days later, I was on the road. And it's probably significant to say that my partner was doing that same succession of things. And we started traveling, which we came out to the Northwest to travel for about 6 weeks before we intended to go back were from Minnesota, to go back to Minnesota to look for work in, I have a master's in social work. And one of our stops was Holden, and we were here for 6 weeks, so we traveled a total of a couple months. And in that time of being here, decided that this was the time to stay here longer if that was gonna happen. And we're here, I'm here. So I guess as far as what, I mean, I'd say just the experience of living here for a year, it's had a lot of impact on my life. I think also though I went through a little bit of maybe some identity kind of problems, or just sort of this real, I mean, I had so much invested in graduate school for 3 years and this whole goal of this master's, and I just left it. I mean, all my stuff's in a box, and you know, someone had asked me whether they might see a copy of my thesis, again, you know, a project I put a year of work into, and I don't even know where it is, you know? I mean, I couldn't find it, but a way that I kind of just took this complete detour, and some things I'd been asked to do in with the graduate program, and I just had to call them and say, it's not gonna happen this year, and I thought, what have I done? You know, why did I just completely abandon this goal? And I realize now, I think there was a time where I even thought, do I even want to do this social work? But I realize now I do, and in fact, the next change will be in October. I'll move back to Minnesota to be that social worker. But I don't know if there was more I was supposed to say. Or
well, it sounds like it. The change, there was a whole rapid succession of changes for you. And then you find yourself here at Holden, which wasn't necessarily part of the change to begin with.
Right. And I think maybe some of how I felt just somewhat of, some angst about the decision was just, or the realization of being here and the things I'd left behind was just maybe how rapid things happened, you know, and within a few days we're on the road with this completely different lifestyle, and within 2 months we've found renters for our house and packed our house and moved here. So there wasn't maybe some of that.
And looking back, you said it was good to be here for the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this place offers a lot of opportunity for growth.
Thanks. Okay, Mr.
Rosina. Yes, I think the dramatic change for me was to abandon everything in Ghana and decided to take this unknown step to come to a place. I've read about America in books. I've seen America on maps, but I didn't know where I was going when I took that leap of faith and packed everything. And before I came, I was a trader. We call that in our country, but here you will say that people in small business. And so it wasn't that I was just sitting there doing nothing, but to fold everything and say, oh, I'm going to go try it, go see it. If I don't want it, I will come back. And just leave everything there and come into a place where, you know, being a matured woman, living my life, you know, as somebody independent and having everything, and then coming into a place where you have to make this dramatic change that you have to start like a child. Even the English was different, because British English and American English are not the same. And so you have to really start all over again. And that was a change, and the growth has come out of that change. And it took me 3 years to go back, to return even to Ghana when I first came. And I just came with this time I traveled with big bags, but I came with a shoulder bag. And that's all I came with from Ghana. I just left all my belongings and I said, I'm going to go and try. If I don't like it, I'm coming back.
It's a pretty radical change.
So.
And again, like Lizzie, it's a whole succession of changes that have occurred as a result of the
that change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Change. Mm-hmm.
How long ago was that, sister?
19 years ago. I was 37. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't, you know, young. I was matured. I knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said, I'm going, if I don't like it, I'm coming.
Thank you for sharing. Yes?
I was able to, I'm Doris Braley.
Doris?
Braley.
Okay.
I was able to last February do something that I've been wanting to do a lot in my lifetime, in that I went on a medical mission to Nicaragua. And I saw poverty that I never knew existed. And I worked with a pediatrician. There were 6 doctors and 5 of us nurses and interpreters. And we went out to a remote village about a day's drive out of Managua. And I'll never be the same. And I'm going back again next March. And the books that I read now, the way that I look at maybe even what the United States is doing to Nicaragua, and all this is different, something that I'd never ever thought about. I just wanted to be a nurse going to a third world country. But the impact it's made on my life is just changes all the time.
Sounds, again, like a pretty dramatic shift.
When I left, I told my husband I may not be the same when I come back. He said, I hope you don't change too much. But I do. I look at each day, I think I look at each day differently anymore.
So it's made a difference in your coming back and what you mm-hmm. do and how you think about it. So.
Right.
Thank you.
I'll share. I brought my holy bells to show you.
You talked about these before.
Yes, these are important to me. You can all jingle them if you'd like. I got them from a friend, and this is really about her change that deepened something that I already believed, which I guess makes it my change too. I have a beautiful friend named Claire with sapphire eyes and sable hair. She's about my age, which is about 38. She's a single mother, as I am. And she gave me these bells, knowing that I like bells. She was sharing stories from Arabia. They're from by the Red Sea in Saudi Arabia. And before she divorced, she and her husband were there on a company trip. And she said that they were on a cliff so high that from their room window, they could look down on the clouds. She was at the bazaar, having a wonderful time going around taking in the market. She came upon this woman sitting there who had terrible cataracts and was old and thin, and she had these lovely baskets spread out in front of her with all of this incredible jewelry, strands and strands of bells, and a necklace that was tiny little bells this wide. And Claire, thinking that she was buying antiques, had a great bargain, bought all of the silver and the baskets too. And then her life changed and she came back to the United States. And just about a month ago, one of her friends from Saudi Arabia came back and they were reminiscing. Claire had already given me these bells. She called me to come over, and it was a Thursday. I thought of that. It was a Thursday. We were sitting on her bed like young girls in junior high. We were looking at all this beautiful jewelry, and she started to cry. I said, what's wrong? She told me that she didn't want to ruin the gift of these bells to me, but that she hadn't realized until she talked to her friend, who was on leave, that the woman was a beggar woman, and that she had bought her dowry, the dowry from all those generations of women passed down, and that the woman was selling them to survive. And that's when they discussed that the country, for all of its proclamations of justice and fair play, don't provide it because no one would take the time and the risk of attracting government attention to drive a beggar woman to the city for cataract surgery and all the follow-up care. And Claire was sobbing and saying, oh, I don't want you to cry over these bells. And I said, you know, I believe everybody matters. And so I'm going to take these bells with me wherever I go in my car. And anytime I get a chance, I'm going to tell people about that beggar woman. And you were a tourist, and so you were doing what tourists did. And somebody needed to buy me, and it's okay. All the beggars matter. We all matter, just like the leaves on the trees. And she looked so relieved, and I knew that that was right. She left to hold the bell.
These were the dolly that she sold
to
a fellow kaiser. That she had no opportunity to marry because she had a dowry.
I don't know. I don't know anything about the woman. And to me, that's part of the joy of it, because I can hand the bells around and you can all respect them and think about her and all of the other beggars sitting wherever to sell everything they have to live. So.
And it's something that will probably continue to be a source of change for her as you keep it.
Yes. Every time they ring, I think about her. I don't know if she's alive. I don't know that I'm more of her everywhere.
Sometimes it gets translated into connections with other people. Yeah. Anybody else want to share a story?
That's a hard act to
follow. I'll just talk maybe about a change of perspective, and it's kind of a holding story. I can't even remember how many years ago it was when we were here. We've been coming every year for about 12 years, 12 or 13. And I have two daughters with handicaps, and so we come, in the early years, we came with both of them. And it's a fairly simple change, but I think it really was important that when you come here, you hear so many challenging, important things to be involved with. And I think there was a part of me that, because of having Rachel and Beth, it was very easy for that to be the what defined our life. And, you know, people will say to you, well, aren't you wonderful? You know, you do such a good job with these two girls. And it was here at Holden that suddenly I thought, you know, there was no choice about having the two girls. We're just doing what we were given, you know, and what we had to do to cope with. And I suddenly decided I wanted to have more choice in my life, that I wanted to do more than just cope with what had happened to me. And that was, it was just an insight I got here, and it proceeded to, and I think still does change, has changed our lives, that we then are starting to look, then I started to look around me more and say, what is possible to do in our life that goes beyond that, even though that can be pretty involving? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What can we do that's a choice? Because having two children with handicaps is not a choice, it's just something that's happened to you, and then you do a good job or you don't do a good job, or like most parenting, alternately. Some days do a good job and some days not. But that's a change that Holden made for me, and I've been very thankful for it.
So this space at Holden allowed you to create some new spaces for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think being challenged and always maybe in my mind saying, well, I can't do that because we're so busy and we're so into that challenge, I think. And saying something like, yeah, but I had no choice about any of that. Anything else I decide to do would be my choice.
Where a new insight, a new insight into yourself and your choices. Mm-hmm. And again, how that has changed and other things.
We've gotten involved with a refugee resettlement and went to Central America and then had a African daughter live with us for 4 years and, you know, various things like that that just have made our life entirely different than it would have been if we had continued to define our life by being parents of two handicapped children.
And it sounds like it has enriched the lives of the children as well as
lives,
the family.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
I have a comment. It's not a choice, but she reminded me of something that I heard one time. People talk about others bearing their crosses well. And there's a difference between as Christ bore his cross, what you have thrust upon you is not a cross. It's what you choose to bear. So hers was not a cross to bear because she had no choice, and that's what made me remember that, because she had no choice there. But if she were to have adopted those two children, that would have been a cross to bear. Just a little side light on
Okay. Yes.
This is a change story, but it's a change that isn't happening yet.
Oh.
I know. How sometimes you know you have to do something, and it's either a matter of timing or working up the courage or doing something. And I guess I'm at the working up the courage stage. The church that my family and I are active in is the same church that my dad was the pastor at from the time I was 4 till I was 13. And we moved out of town and moved to Reno and moved to California, moved to Seattle, moved back to town, and started attending there. Partly because there are a lot of people there that I've known since I was 4. They have an excellent preschool that all my children have gone through, a really nice preschool that I've been on the board of. They have a strong bell choir, nice music. I mean, everything was really coming along nicely, and I felt very comfortable in the situation. Until 2 years ago, we got a change of pastors. And I know, pastors come and pastors go. That's part of... And I have been in that position as a pastor's daughter myself, where you go into a new congregation and you think, oh my goodness, I wonder what these people are going to be like. So I know how that is.
You kidding?
And I have tried very hard to like this new pastor. I have prayed about it. I have gone to church first regularly, and now I can't make myself go on a regular basis. I can get to Sunday school, that's about it, a lot of times. And so I know that the choice is going to have to be, what am I going to choose to do with this? That my religious background is important to me. On the one hand, I have this... If I have an emergency, in fact, in January, our water heater blew up. And we were suddenly homeless for 5 days until they got it cleaned up and got a new water heater. And, you know, I think about these people in floods. We had this much hot, clean water in our house, and it took 5 days. But we had our whole church community, we could call and say, our water heater blew up. Can we have some dinner? It's 8 o'clock at night. And someone would say, we'll be right there. These are people who I can trust for anything. If my kid is sick, I can call them. If I'm not feeling well, they will come pick up my children. I mean, it's my family. So I need to keep that. But on the other hand, I don't have a spiritual life there. I can't. This man is so chauvinistic and egotistical and kind of I don't know. He has quite the ego. And I can't sit through the sermon and listen to him. It drives me crazy. So I don't go, which isn't a good solution. You know, I think, okay, I'll do Vespers every night at Holden for 3.5 weeks. Let's see, how many Sundays will that count for? And my kids have grown up there. And these are people my kids know. And if I need anything, they're there. Sounds and you know, like, on the other hand, I can't stomach the worship. And I'm missing something, and I need to make a change, I need to make a decision. And I know I need to make a change, and I can't. I don't know if it's a lack of courage or, I mean, there's other churches in Las Vegas, obviously. Well, there are other churches in Las Vegas, really. I don't think so. There are churches in Las Vegas. And I'm sure that there are other pastors I could, you know, but if I went someplace where the worship meant something to me, I'd lose my whole community. And if I
sounds like a very difficult choice, and it's already a change for you.
Yes,
and I, you know, I'm trying
to give this man a release.
What are the possibilities of his leaving?
Well,
are there others who feel as you do?
Yes, and other people think this guy is the greatest thing since sliced bread. He can play the guitar, and his son plays the drums, and
because I was in a similar situation, but I will not let anyone push me out of my church. And I suffered through it. And eventually he left, he was moved. But we, a number of us felt this way, and we prevailed upon the bishop to move him, that he was damaging the parish. And he was moved, and he damaged the next parish. I think he still is.
Except that some people think this man, you know, walks on water.
Yeah, there were a few.
He's musical. He started this new contemporary service that's well attended. He's on the radio every morning with his little cheerful message.
Well, I think you're going to have a, maybe you just have to wait and let the Spirit resolve this for you.
No, that's clear.
And then I feel badly for the sake of my children, because I do want them to have a strong religious upbringing. Mm-hmm. That's something of value to me. Mm-hmm. We do religious things at home, just mm-hmm. within the family, but I want them to be at Sunday school and vacation Bible school and worship. And I don't set a good example when, you know, 8:30 kind of comes and goes, and I'm still drinking coffee. And I say, come on, let's get on our clothes and at least go to Sunday school. This isn't setting a good example for my children.
I wonder if maybe we can talk about that a little bit later, you and I, just a little more about the changes going on in that.
Nonsense, I'm up here to escape from all of that.
I'll get it.
It sounds like you really have, you're anticipating some kind of change, but you don't want to make the change. There is no consensual solution. I can't make a change without losing something.
I'm aware of the time, and it's 7:15. There are others that have not had a chance to tell their stories, and but I want to honor the closing time too. So if people have to leave, we could close the official part and continue on with those that might want to stay on and do some more sharing of stories. Okay. So if you need to leave or want to leave, please feel free to do so at this time, because we are at the end of our hour. Otherwise, we'll ask to share some more stories.
I can share mine. I think retreats do bring about change, and this is probably what you really need. 7 years ago, my husband and I took our, at the time, my husband must have been six, so we had a three-month-old daughter, and we went to a family camp in Rapid City, where I had gone as a camper for many years when I was in high school. And in that setting, my husband really got to talking and communicating about a lot of things, and it brought out the fact that he had a good job in the insurance business. He wanted to go back to school and pursue either being a doctor or pharmacist. And I was like, oh, you know, he had a good job and we were going the right track in our life. And it was just really kind of a blow to me. But from there on, we went back home and we really talked about it more. And he did decide to go back to school and study pharmacy at a college nearby. And so he, through that time, in fact, now he finished, he had his national boards in pharmacy just Monday when we left Minnesota and came out here. He's all done, 100% done after 7 years. But the changes it brought about, it was so hard for me because my expectations from the time we were first married is get a job, get married, have a family, and everything goes smooth. And it was really... But it came to my life that there are really deep issues in our marriage we had to work on. And I feel like we've just come through so much that it brought out so much good that I would never change the struggles we went through. I would never take back. And I guess I just feel that change is so necessary. And again, like I said, the retreat, to be able to look within yourself and find out and just share with your loved ones what really we need. And to make those visions a reality is very important.
And that's often happens with change, I think, where even as difficult and the struggles may be, and you're ready to give up at times, but when you get through it and you look back and you can say, like you did, how it has helped you grow. Being in a different place where you wouldn't be if you hadn't gone through that.
Not to better not have any big announcements this time.
It's your
turn. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go to school? Yeah.
She wants kids.
The next stage.
I think you should point out your husband to us so we can award it.
Yes. Make a comment myself.
And what? I didn't get your name. What was your name?
Cheryl.
Okay. And your name is
Phoebe.
Phoebe. Okay.
I really related to what you said about. How did you put it about feeling like you had something that you knew you had to do? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I have found that those times in my life have been the most profound times of change for me. It's just, I can't ignore the voice anymore. It's like, I know I have to do this. And I don't know about some people here, but I've struggled for many years trying to follow a voice that I knew was there, but I had been kind of brought up not to listen to it. Mm-hmm. I've been brought up more to be there for everybody else and nurture them through their thing. Mm-hmm. So learning how to listen to that and actually finally act on it has been a really scary and long thing, but I have been finding that trusting in that has brought some amazing benefits. It's always scary. In fact, I'm going through something right now where it's such a process that amazes me. I mean, when you look back and you can see how things have brought you to this point and to this point and to this point, and now I'm at a point where I feel like I'm going through some of the most important steps in my life to get closer to who I really am, which is what I think is what growing as a human is all about, is just getting closer and closer to something that's really true within yourself. And so I'm facing a transition over the next couple of years of creating a closer, a life that's closer to what I've really been working a long time towards. And I'm really scared about it, but I'm really excited about it too. It's going to be a very interesting year or two because it's interesting because I can't really make a change right now because my son has one more year of high school and then there are several options open at that point when he leaves home. So I have a year to kind of think about it and plan for it and meditate on it and pray on it. And it's very exciting to me, but it's also very scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a test. It's like, what am I going to make of myself now? Now that I can't use the kid as an excuse anymore. So it's, but the voice, learning how to kind of trust it and make some leaps. That's the thing I've always had a hard time with is when is it a leap and when is it a wise trusting kind of thing.
And maybe you don't always know until you've been there, and then afterwards you look back.
Yeah, well, when you get to be my age and you're still doing that, and you're thinking maybe it's too late and you're still trying to make the changes, so looking for them.
Look for precipitating factors. I don't know if you understand what I mean by that, but something will happen that will precipitate an action, and you will be drawn toward the decision. Maybe not even hearing things, but things may happen in your life that will help lead you in the path that you should go. I'm a strong believer in precipitating situations. I count on them, as a matter of fact, to move my husband from time to time.
Yeah, well, he is the one remaining obstacle. Right. He is the one remaining obstacle, but he's very open, so.
But something may happen, and you will suddenly know, yes, I am to do this, or forget it.
But I think following that voice, being connected with that inner voice, acknowledging that it's there, and giving it credence.
And also through prayer, I found that through that prayer and just turning it over to that other power to, again, make your eyes open to things that, those signs that are there, and saying, the decision will be made for me and I'll know when it's right if I just let that power be there and if I just listen and be open to the signs that I'm being given. That in most cases, not all, but I can feel very comfortable with the decisions I make.
Florida Scott Maxwell has something to say about that. She says, our whole duty may be to clarify and increase what we are, to make our consciousness a finer quality. She says, I often say to people, you have neat, tight expectations of what life ought to give you, but you won't get it. That isn't what life does. Life does not accommodate you, it shatters you. It is meant to, and it couldn't do it better. Every seed destroys its container, or else there would be no fruition.
Amen.
Amen.